This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. As the year comes to a close, we look back to things that stood out in popular culture. 2016 yielded music like Beyoncé's album Lemonade. We also saw films like Moonlight and 13th. Just a few of the many notable items in popular media from the past year that we'll talk about today on Back Channel, Connecting Culture and Context. Joining me as always, Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown. They're with us to share some of their favorites in music, movies, and television from 2016. Mark is a professor of African and African-American studies at Duke University. He's an author and the host of the webcast Left of Black. Welcome back, Mark.
Hey, Frank.
And Natalie Bullock Brown is a professor of film and broadcast media at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, Frank.
We're going to spend this program looking back at some of the picks of the year. Really an eventful year. But before we get started, I guess, your thoughts toward this year's culture in general. I mean, was this a pivotal year, do you think, in some ways, just in general? Or is that, maybe that's always true, one way or another, there's one event or one kind of piece of music or movie. But in some ways, this feels like it might have been a really pivotal year. I don't know how your feelings on that.
I think we often hear, and we've had heard for the last 2 years, about a relative depression about how folks felt about Black cultural production. I didn't necessarily feel that way. I felt as though we have to go find the good stuff. I think this is the year where the good stuff bubbled up, mm-hmm. where some of the most visible people did high-profile projects that were very creative and intense. And generated responses from folks that also produce other culture. And you also had platforms now where folks who are more in the DL, if you will, in terms of their presence and visibility, that their work began to bubble up into the mainstream. So I think it's been a critical moment in that regard. And I think you always think about, in the history of at least Black cultural production, that some of the best production occurs as a counter to what's happening mm-hmm. politically. And in that regard, Black culture seemed to speculate about how the end of the year was going to go down. So it was already ramped up in that regard, yeah. you know, before the inevitable happened last month.
Right. I totally agree with Mark. And I think that, you know, that we saw the stepping up of a lot of artists, you know, Beyoncé notably, in terms of her determination to address Black Lives Matter, you know, to just respond to and support and confirm what, you know, we were seeing in the culture, what was happening to Black men and women being killed by police or white vigilantes. I mean, there was a lot going on that really highlighted the fact that we are not post-racial. And I think that our artists responded to that.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, Mark, and also what you said about others then responding to it. So it wasn't just a response to political events and maybe some prescience about what was going to take place, but also the fact that others in mainstream popular culture, you know, in were in a position to respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bar had been raised. I mean, yeah. You think about Beyoncé, you just think about the work that her quote-unquote little sister Solange did, you know, toward the end of the year with a seat at the table. I mean, that's a great example of how the culture is now full with, you know, all of these kind of very diverse expressions of Blackness, and folks have been inspired, you know, to produce their own work in that regard.
Well, let's talk about, go ahead, Natalie.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to just kind of underscore what Mark just said with the idea that this is grown folks' music. Like, I think Mark has said that in the past on one of our shows, the music and the art seems to be growing up, like, at a rapid pace, and it's necessary. I mean, I think that what we're seeing in the culture, what has been happening in society and politics and so forth, has urged that on.
Well, Mark, let's talk about one of your picks. We're talking about music. This is the artist BJ, the Chicago Kid, and his album from this year called In My Mind. I want to play a clip of the song Church. Let's listen.
She says she wanna drink, do drugs, and have sex tonight. But I got church in the morning, church in the morning. She says she wanna drink, do drugs, and have sex tonight. But I got church in the morning, church in the morning.
Hopefully we can go to heaven, I pray. Hopefully we can go to heaven, 'cause I'm staying. Hopefully we can go to heaven, I pray. Hopefully we can go to heaven, I'm staying.
Clip of the song Church by BJ the Chicago Kid from the album In My Mind, one of Mark Anthony Neal's picks for the best music in 2016. Mark, why?
Chicago kid, church boy, right? And he's singing about what is a classic dilemma, right? It's Marvin Gaye 40 years ago talking about let's get it on, and then describes it as something like sanctified. You know, BJ is updating that narrative for this generation at a moment where we're, you know, we'd be apt to think that young black folks are not still invested the black Christian experience or the black Muslim experience, but they are. But they're also still trying to balance that spiritual life with that secular life. And he does that brilliantly throughout the album. So when you listen to the album, he's doing some gospel stuff. He's doing some kind of classic ballad R&B. He's doing dance music. But it also speaks to how black music itself is really this melange of different styles and genres.
Yeah, that Saturday night, Sunday morning attention. Sam Cooke comes to mind, too, in a lot of ways, both in his entire body of work. And also, do you think BJ the Chicago Kid, I mean, this music itself influencing a Chicago soul sound?
Oh, I think there's no question. I mean, unfortunately, you know, Kanye West has been very significant in kind of highlighting Midwest soul music, you know, in his sampling over the last decade or so. So we do see a kind of renaissance, right? When we think about the work of Chance the Rapper, you know, and his 7 Grammy nominations, there's something happening in the city of Chicago, I think. And I think Chance and, you know, BJ the Chicago Kid are emblematic of what's happening there.
Well, you know, when Kanye gets a job in the Trump administration, that opens up a whole new space for other artists. Natalie, one of your picks. You talked about, of course, Beyonce's Lemonade. Let's hear a clip from Formation. Can't hear enough of that. Let's listen.
My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country out me. I got hot sauce in my bag, swag. I see it, I want it.
Clip from Formation from Beyonce from the album Lemonade, one of Natalie Bullock Brown's picks for the best music in 2016. A lot to say about Lemonade, and we've said a lot, but you know, there's always more. I mean, we heard from listeners who listened to our conversation about that when we talked about the album a couple of months ago, saying that, you know, that we talked about it in ways that hadn't been done, and here's an album that was talked about a lot in the popular press.
Absolutely.
There's a lot to say about this record, isn't
definitely,
there?
Definitely, definitely. You know, one of the things that I love about this past year, I guess, culturally, is that the conversations, like the depth and the level of quality of the conversations around race, I mean, intraracial conversations around colorism and my mind is drawing a blank. But one of the things that came out of Formation, I remember Yaba Blay wrote just an amazingly honest article about how, as a dark-skinned black woman coming from New Orleans, hearing this lyric about, you know, you bring a Creole with that Negro, right? That triggered her, you know, that really made her start thinking about her experience growing up in Louisiana. And, you know, we continue to have that sort of dynamic between dark and light in our community. So, I mean, you know, clearly Beyonce was doing a whole bunch of work with Lemonade and certainly with Formation.
And when we talk about those responses, I mean, Yaba is a great example. I mean, the work that she's done towards the end of 2016 with the Professional Black Girl series, in part, is a response to this narrative about what beautiful is in terms of black life, dark skin versus light skin and what have you.
Absolutely.
But it speaks to the influence of this album, not only today, but going forward, Mark. Don't you think that these kinds of conversations within African-American communities are critical at a time when thoughts about resistance are going to have to change. Ideas, strategies, tactics in this new era. And that means a kind of a heartfelt and deep conversations among communities of color.
And I think we'll see that happen. And I think what's great about this moment in this regard is that, you know, the hypervisibility of the Obama era is about to disappear, right? Mm-hmm. So folks can really retreat back to communities, back to insular spaces, back to maroon spaces, if you will, to hide in public, if you will, to have these really deep conversations that, you know, like Salon suggested, it's for us, by us. Right. That's where the conversation is at this point.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, say about formation, you know, one of the things that I think we may or may not have really excavated about that song is that Beyonce is laying out a work ethic. Like, she is the hardest working Black woman, you know, like, she, I don't even know if she sleeps, but the level of excellence, the level of productivity that she puts out, like, when she talks about, you know, I work hard, you know, I get what's mine. Like, she's really speaking. No, she's not joking at all. That's right. Yes. And when she says calls for us to get into formation, you know, on the surface, it seems like, you know, she's just saying, you know, be fly and all that. But she's really talking about get in line to do the work, to mm-hmm. live up to mm-hmm. that purpose that's mm-hmm. in you. Like, forget all the external stuff. Do what's in you and do it, you know, to the highest level possible.
And we talked about this before, but coming from a person who doesn't have to do that, they don't have to talk about politics to remain top of the pop charts. So that's another, in a sense, another an example and a call to people at the top that this involves everybody.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge.
You talked about Solange too. Both of you picked that, and particularly A Seat at the Table. Let's listen to a clip from the song Rise.
Drink it away. I tried to put one in the air. I tried to dance it away. I tried to change it with my hair. I wear my credit card below. Thought a new dress would make to work it away, but that just made me even sadder. I tried to keep myself busy. I ran around.
That actually Cranes in the Sky from the album A Seat at the Table by Solange. We talked a little bit about that, Natalie, but the importance of that record and Solange coming out this year.
Yeah, I mean, this is another, like, great example to me of grown folks music. And you know, one of the reasons why Cranes in the Sky, I think, is so significant is because, like, every Black woman, and probably Black men too, but I know when I heard the song and I heard the lyrics, I was like, dang, that's me. Like, I've done that. I know what that's about. That attempt to, you know, kind of deal with the depression of repression and oppression and how you navigate that, you know. So Solange, I think, is so mature and really, you know, high level thinking going on in this album. I mean, not just with Cranes, but she's also, you know, I don't know a lot about Afrofuturism, but she is definitely pushing the envelope as far as what she's envisioning and projecting for, you know, what Black people are and can be. And I think that is what's going to grounds her album and is what's going to cause it to be something that we refer back to and look at in the future.
The thing I love about Solange is that she's aware of what her strengths and her weaknesses are, right? She knows that she's not the strongest singer. She knows that she's not the strongest dancer, if we saw her on SNL a couple of months back, right? So she understands her voice as an accompaniment to the music that's occurring, right?
Yep.
So that when she posts a playlist of songs that inspired her on Tidal, and you see that she had been listening to Sun Ra, you see that she had been listening to Alice Coltrane, right? She is a deep thinker, right? Mm-hmm. And constructed a musical palette that allowed her to do that deep thought. But she's also recovering people. You know, folks hadn't been thinking about Master P in any significant kind of way for a long time. And to hear him narrate his own story of his coming up in the world and becoming who he became, and then you listen to For Us, By Us after that, you know, which is a very clear claim about the kind of everyday incidences against Black humanity, and having just a space, right, to be honest about what that is to be Black and to create something for your own.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about coming of age. This would be a good time to switch gears and talk about films, the coming of age film Moonlight, something that you both chose, and we talked about that again earlier in the year, chronicles the story of a Black man from childhood to adulthood as he comes to terms with his identity. Let's hear a clip set with the main character is, this in this case, a child, and is talking with his mentor named Juan. Let's listen.
I've been here a long time. I'm from Cuba. A lot of Black folks in Cuba. You wouldn't know that from being here, though. I was a wild little shorty, man. Just like you. Running around with no shoes on, the moon was out. This one time, I run by this old lady. I was running, hollering, cutting a fool, boy. This old lady. She stopped me. She said, running around, catching a boy that light. In moonlight, Black boys look blue. You blue. That's what I gonna call you. Blue.
Say your name, Blue.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
A clip from the film Moonlight from this past year. My guests are popular culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Natalie, tell us about that movie and what moved you.
Well, definitely the fact that Moonlight is I think it's the first time in a very, very long time that Black men, Black boys figure prominently is just like not even saying it right. I mean, this is all about the experience of Black males. And the way that it is rendered is so incredibly beautiful to me. I mean, the cinematography, just the fact that the clip that we just heard has the waves behind it. Like, that speaks to totally countering this narrative of something we've talked about before, where Black people don't swim. We have this aversion to the water. You know, this film does such incredible work in humanizing a part of our population that has been so thoroughly criminalized and dehumanized, not just this year, but, you know, for centuries. And so I just, that's why it's one of my favorites. And I just saw it Friday, but it has stuck with me. Just the imagery, the cinematography in particular, just really getting in close and personal and intimate with these faces and these Black bodies that normally an audience, you know, people don't want to even deal with.
Mark. The character who plays Juan, Mahershala Ali, who's had a great year and, of course, has just gotten a Golden Globe nomination for his performance in Moonlight. What I loved about that scene is that you see the transference of wisdom, right, from an older gentleman. He's not older, but an adult to a younger Black male. We don't see a whole lot of that. But what's also important about his character of Juan, it didn't have to be a pristine character, right? He's a problematic figure, right? He's a troubling figure, right? Even a criminal figure in some sort of context, but that doesn't mean that he didn't have an experience that in which he learned some wisdom from his own experience that could be transferred to someone younger than him. Yeah. And that just opens up the space in terms of how we talk about Black men and modeling and role models and things like that, right? You don't have to be that perfect figure to be able to transfer information and knowledge onto somebody that's of use.
Right. And it's complicated, right? He's complex. He is a drug dealer. Juan is, but he, you know, loves on this young boy, sees his difference, you know, affirms it.
Is a good partner.
Has a great partner. You know, and then when the little boy challenges him on selling drugs to his mother, you know, that is It's a moment that I again think is beautiful because we again see this humanity in Juan because he breaks down and cries.
It's Back Channel today on The State of Things with Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown taking a look back at the best in popular culture for 2016, and that continues in a moment. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio with popular culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Another installment of Back Channel, connecting culture and context today. Looking back at the best in music, movies, and TV in 2016, it was a huge year, obviously a very big year with lots and lots of stuff. Why don't we take a look quickly at the movie 13th? We've talked about that earlier. Let's listen to a clip.
The 13th Amendment to the Constitution makes it unconstitutional for someone to be held as a slave. There are exceptions, including criminals.
The loophole was immediately exploited. What you got after that was a rapid transition to a mythology of black criminality.
Some people got the real problem.
Animals. Beasts that needed to be controlled.
You better believe it.
I'm only human.
It became virtually impossible for a politician to run and appear soft on crime.
The kinds of kids that are called super predators.
Millions of dollars will be allocated for prison and jail facilities.
Three strikes and you are out.
That's a clip from the trailer of the movie 13th, the documentary, and of course, you know, at a time when our criminal justice system and law enforcement was kind of a critical element in the headlines this year. Mark, your thoughts on 13th?
Important film. It helped to visualize a conversation that has really germinated within black communities over the last 10 years in terms of talking about the prison industrial complex. So whether we go back 20 years ago to think about the work that Angela Davis had been doing around prison work, and of course, Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow. And so the film makes this so much more accessible to folks who aren't going to read Angela Davis and aren't going to read, you know, Michelle Alexander, that they can see this film and see folks kind of present bite-sized narratives about what this is. And again, it's, you know, it's been the year of Ava. You know, this, you know, that Ava DuVernay could go away from the Hollywood mode, right? You know, working on a Disney movie now after the success of Selma, and was politically committed enough. Again, talking about the Beyonce point that you make, you know, what happens when the most visible people make sacrifices that they don't have to make, right? She's not doing the 13th because it's making her any money or even generating any kind of commercial prestige for her, but because it was a subject matter that was important to her, her community, and she had a skill set to make sure that folks understood the dynamic of that.
Absolutely. And I think also, you know, just like so Moonlight and films like it present this counter narrative, right, to what we are seeing, what we have been told, you know, for years about black people. Ava lays that narrative like bare by exposing us to why we have this narrative. Where is it coming from? And by doing so, dispelling it, really getting rid of, I mean, if you see the film, you cannot walk away from it thinking the same things about, you know, black men, black people, even our government in the same way. So I just applaud what she has done, and I agree with Mark, like she's showing us a work ethic that, you know, we can aspire to, that can inspire and motivate us within the community to do our own cultural production work.
Well, let's talk about another documentary, this one the biopic about jazz legend Miles Davis. Let's listen to the trailer.
If you gonna tell a story, come with some attitude, man.
Miles Davis.
My name's Dave Braden, Rolling Stone magazine.
I'm here to do your comeback story.
Okay, move back a little bit.
Yeah. Oh.
Don't send people to my house.
You have new material.
My material. My session tape.
You're under contract here.
We actually own that tape. Miles!
You own? How much money you got on you? Okay, you about 19,000 light, but that's a start. I moved to New York, met some cats, made some music.
Studied piano too, huh?
Nah. Just woke up black, knew how to play.
You're black?
The music don't move on and it's dead music. It's all about improvisation.
That's from the trailer from the biopic that dramatizes the life of Miles Davis. It's called Miles Ahead. I'm talking with Mark Anthony Neal and Natalie Bullock Brown. The importance of that film, Mark.
Look, white men do not have have not cornered the market on troubling, complex masculinity. And you would be, you might believe if we were to listen to Hollywood that there were no interest in complicated lives of black men or black people in general. Miles Davis is a very troubling figure, right? He was also an artistic genius. All of those figures within our community, to the extent that they have influenced our culture and an American culture, deserve to be treated with the kind of hand that Don Cheadle tried to treat Miles Davis. The hope is, you know, however you might feel about Miles Ahead, the hope is that the interest in a Miles Davis creates a context in which we can go in and do a real film on Billie Holiday. To do a film on Sam Cooke and Marvin Gaye. I mean, we're talking about folks who are so influential in the culture. We can't think about white peers, for instance, that have had that amount of influence in which films haven't been done on them, right? You know, so when we consider the influence of some of these black male artists or black artists in general, why not give them the same kind of level of treatment?
Yeah. And I mean, so to me, Miles Ahead is a great example of you know, the controversy behind Oscars So White, because our stories are not given the same weight. They're not given the same level of importance, and just I will never be able to shake the fact that Don Cheadle said he had to change, like he had to create a white character, a white sidekick for Miles Davis's character in order for the film to be sold so that it could be seen. So that to me, you know, says we have a long way to go. And yes, we need to start treating these black icons, you know, that are American icons. They're not right. Just black icons, with more dignity, more resources so that their stories can really be told.
And we know that they're interested because he had to do a Kickstarter to get it done, right? So the fact that he had to crowdfund it, that looks like that's going to be the model going forward if we actually want to create the art that mm-hmm. we want to see. Mm-hmm.
Do you think this has done that? Has this sort of cracked the mold? I mean, again, if you have a problematic character, then the trouble for a black director is, oh, am I going to reinforce the stereotypes? If you're a white director, nobody's going to buy it. That's a tension that seems to have been an obstacle to producing these films in the first place. Have we broken that barrier, do you think, through this film and some others?
I think if the films are honest about who the folks are, if they actually deal with the humanity, right? In one way, you do see Miles Davis as a misogynistic beast. But there's also a context for that in the film, right? Mm-hmm. And that part of it is very important, right? That you treat your audience with a level of sophistication that you think the artist represents, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Cheadle, even despite having to create a white character to bring certain audiences there, I think for the most part, he created that context in which we can think about Miles as this sophisticated human being who had this tremendous artistic talent.
Right.
Let's talk about a straight-up documentary, Natalie, that was one of your picks this year, The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, and we have a clip from the film's trailer.
The Black Panthers.
Black Panthers.
The Black Panther Party.
Black Panther Movement.
The Black Panthers were absolutely unique.
Being black in America meant that you didn't walk down the street with the same sense of safety and the sense of privilege as a white person. Attack dogs, fire hoses.
Police jump on you, beat you up, put the gun at your head. This is what we were going through on a daily basis.
We stand on the eve of a black revolution, brothers.
Now we have voices within the community that we're not going to continue to turn the other cheek.
We want black.
The Second Amendment guarantees a citizen a right to bear arms on public property.
We're going to carry our guns and we're going to follow the police. We're going to maintain a legal distance, ready to throw down if necessary.
Anyone who would approve of this kind of demonstration must be out of their mind.
Clip from the trailer from the documentary The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, one of Natalie Bullock Brown's picks for the best of the year. She joins me today along with Mark Anthony Neal. What'd you like about that?
Well, I think I like it more and more as the year progresses. You know, the film was, Stanley Nelson, who is a veteran documentary filmmaker, one of the most established and respected black doc filmmakers that we have. And it was released in February. So we're, you know, the campaign, the political campaign, our presidential election campaign was going on. But, you know, Black Lives Matter had really been established in a way that it was making its mark, no doubt. So for the film, to me, is significant because it points out that, I mean, it makes it so obvious that in so many ways we have not come that far. You know, the conditions under which Black people live and even some of the methods by which we might need to approach, you know, achieving some level of freedom and equality, you know, perhaps we can look to the Panthers for answers, whether it's through their bearing of arms. Not that I necessarily advocate that, but, you know, it could be their survival programs, the breakfast programs, the grocery programs, the ambulance programs, all of these things. All of these programs speak to a level of self-determination that I think, you know, that is what I hear a lot of Black talk about. How do we take care of our own? And especially in light of our new president-elect, to what extent are we going to have to really rally the troops and come together to provide some sort of protection for the community?
Images of the Black Panthers are probably some of the most recognizable images in the archive of Blackness, if you will, of visual culture. And so for many young folks, they've seen all the photographs, right? They've seen the leather jackets, the berets, and what have you. What Stanley Nelson does with this film is bring those images to life, update them for a younger generation, right? So that when you read the Black Panther Party 10-point program, there's nothing that was in that 10 points from 1966 that is not relevant in 2016.
That's right.
And for young folks who don't know what COINTELPRO is, right, have not read any of the Ward Churchill books, for instance, right, have not delved into any of that history, Stanley Nelson puts it all together nicely.
The government conspiracy.
Right.
That was ultimately revealed, and people went to jail in the FBI.
That's as much about the Black Panther Party as it is by young white radicals, as it is about the American Indian movement, right? The irony of this moment and what we saw in North Dakota is that, you know, most folks don't know about what happened in Wounded Knee in 1973, right? Folks don't know that history.
Well, and also, I think it exposes, what's interesting is how well it dovetails with the right-wing agenda, in a sense, the Black Panther agenda. In other words, we don't want government, we don't need government services. We will provide for our own social services, and we will arm ourselves to protect ourselves. We have a Second Amendment to defend ourselves. You could be a Trump voter and also a Black Panther.
Black Panther, and
it turns out you're the same
thing. And I'm sure that's what Jim Brown's thinking.
I'm sure it's not. But also, at the same time, and the brilliance of it is, at the same time, while it shows this mapping over what would be could be considered a right-wing agenda, it also exposes the hypocrisy of a United States where, you know, you could stand up and defend yourself, your right to own a gun. But if you happen to have it hidden in your, if you're walking around Target with a rifle in your hand, nobody stops you. If you've got it hidden in your shoe and are incidental to whatever else police activity, you can be shot to death.
Right.
So I think that's all part of it. Hey, we don't have much time, and I do want to get to TV. Let's talk about Queen Sugar and play a little clip from that TV program.
My life is anything but sugar-coated. I lost my husband. I lost my life. Michael lost his life.
Michael could build a new life if he weren't so damn overprotective. Oh. And if you think my lifestyle of sleeping with a woman is gonna corrupt Micah, you're just hateful.
I couldn't care less about you sleeping with a woman.
Well, if that ain't it, then what lifestyle are you talking about?
You're not a mother. You grow weed.
And you smoke that weed with me. Now what? I'm waiting.
If it's for an apology, you're gonna be waiting a long time.
I don't want a damn apology. I want you to be a grown woman and come the hell out with it.
Live in the lower ninth. I'm not gonna put my son in a position to be killed, shot, or in need of a $10,000 bailout.
Oh, here we go.
No, you wanted me to go there, so I'm there. Your ego is so big, you can't even apologize without making excuses. You were wrong. You took the money, but no. You can't say it.
Why say sorry for something that I did that was right?
Oh my God.
It was for a greater good.
What about my damn greater good?
You know what? You a bougie bitch. You know that, right?
Queen Sugar on the Oprah Winfrey Network.
Oh, God.
Popular culture experts Natalie Bullock Brown and Mark Anthony Neal. Natalie?
Well, there is a lot in that clip. I mean, Queen Sugar is, when we first talked about this on Back Channel a couple of months ago, I think I admitted out loud that, you know, it was, or maybe I admitted to Mark off mic, that I was really struggling with trying to keep up with, like, get into it, because, again, this is Ava DuVernay, this is her masterpiece or her masterwork, and she just lets life just kind of unfold and happen. So if, you know, in our media culture where things are very quick and, you know, there's a lot of immediate gratification, like, you got to wait. you got to get to know these characters. Yeah, yeah. But once you know them, I mean, you love them and you want to, I mean, I cannot wait until the new season starts, because there is so much that we're seeing about Black family, sisters, I mean, the prison industrial complex is dealt with. And in this particular clip that we heard, the contradictions and the hypocrisies that exist within families about, you know, who this person is and who they think they are. And, you know, and then our relationship to each other. And how do you work that out and then still love each other at the end of the day? Mark. And that's important.
Look, I want to hang out with Hollywood and Ralph Angel. I want to have a cup of dark tea with Aunt Viv. Yeah. I mean, these are folks that you know. They're kin, right? And
absolutely.
We don't often not see kin on television.
That's
Black
right.
folks don't see kin on television
right.
that way. And as Natalie suggests, it's a slow-cooked Blackness, right? It's like taking Black life and putting it in a slow cooker. So it's a different aesthetic, but it's an aesthetic that we need to balance.
Right.
The other kinds of aesthetics, right?
Because if you don't do that, you're going to get stereotyped, right? The fast food is stereotyped.
Right, right. You have to slow it down and have folks to engage with the complexity of these folks' lives. And Ava did this. I mean, the other thing about Ava, and this goes back to the Beyonce model, right? The Lemonade model is like, you know, I'm a skilled director, but I know that I can't direct all 13 of these episodes,
right?
So let me make sure I create a space for other women. Right. So Nima Barnett does two episodes. I mean, she has all these women who come in who direct that gives them their opportunity to direct television for the first time.
Too long a year, too short an hour. What a pleasure. First of all, it's been a great year. Thank you so much for a great year at Back Channel. Another year ahead of us. Happy New Year and happy holidays.
Thank
you, Frank. Same to you.
Mark Anthony Neal, Natalie Bullock Brown, Mark, a professor of African and African American studies at Duke. And of course, Natalie Bullock Brown, a professor of film and broadcast media at St. Augustine University. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is a production of North Carolina Public Radio. I'm Frank Stachow.